Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hi there, and on today's show, we're looking at motivating your team. This is episode number 4. Motivation isn't static, and it naturally increases and decreases. In today's organisations, a lot of work is done in teams, where skills and knowledge and experience will only get you so far. When you add motivation, amazing things can happen. The role of the leader is knowing how and when to spark that motivation. But why is motivation so elusive? It comes and goes, it waxes and wanes, and it's because it's so elusive that many people have made very successful careers out of talking about it. You've only got to Google motivational speakers and a whole host of recognisable names come up. People like Tony Robbins, Simon Sinek, Eckhart Tolle. They're just a few. There are those people that talk about it from the psychology of motivation and those that use their charisma and passion for it. And then there are those that recall experiences from life that tell great stories in the face of great challenges and adversity, requiring courage and conviction to overcome all the odds.
In today's conversation, we'll explore the role of the leader in motivating teams and people and look at how you can first prepare the background by ensuring that the slippery eel of motivation doesn't get away. As usual, today's format will run in two parts. First, we'll take 10 minutes to discuss three leadership essentials to reflect on and to put into action all around how you can better motivate your people and your teams. If this subject is something that really resonates with you, you might be a people leader yourself or new into a people leadership role, stay with us for the coaching approach. We'll look at some of the models and we'll give you some food for thought on how you might tackle motivation in new ways in your organisation.
So here's leadership essential number 1. Set clear goals. Now, I know it sounds simple, but most employees become quite demotivated simply because they can't decide what work is a priority. Now, we would always recommend, wouldn't we, Rachel, that leaders set clear goals with their whole team so everyone understands what the priorities are, and that can help improve performance.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what I want to stress on this is most leaders are very good at doing this on an annual basis. So you get back in January or maybe it's September, whenever your financial year starts. And leaders tend to be very good at setting initial goals with their teams, or it might even be the employee development review process. Lasts for about a month, and then we refer back to almost like a busy for being busy sake. Do you know what I mean, John?
I do, and you're absolutely right. It is that sort of once a year effort, and everybody puts their 10p in, but I just don't believe we do it enough. And what happens in practice is that we all become task-driven on the back of that. You see it happening when there's lots to do and time becomes the main driver. It's the greatest currency of value. So goals become these general aims. They become vague, or worse still, they just don't even bother with them. So we have a vague idea of where we want to go and off we set. We set off on our way.
I think the big thing to kind of be mindful of in your team is when you hear people start to say things like, oh, I'm just so busy, I just need to get this done. When I've cleared this, I'll get onto it. When you're hearing that kind of language, alarm bells should be going.
For sure.
That motivation is waning. And that's when you need to come back and set goals, not aims.
Yeah, but do them together.
Do them together.
So that's leadership essential number 1.
Like it.
Set clear goals. What about leadership essential number 2?
So number 2 is get to know what makes your team members tick. Now, you might think you know your team members quite well. What we're saying on this one is get to know and understand what motivates them better. We tend to, as leaders, think that people are motivated by things that we're motivated by and that everybody's built the same way. So spending time in your one-to-ones with your team members, asking them questions about what's important to them, both inside and outside of work, write notes while you're doing this, or just take a few moments after you've had a one-to-one to reflect and just go, what did I take away from that that might motivate that team member versus what I'm motivated myself? And I think why this is important is it starts to kind of help you build a picture of what's most important to them, and in turn what motivates them, and then kind of think about what their preferred motivational style might be. And again, it's looking out for that language, those little giveaways that will start to tell you.
Yeah, people give clues away.
Yeah.
And if you simply think about motivation for people, their preference will either be for toward motivation, so something that they can get, something that they can receive, or something that they want to avoid, and away motivation. So a very simple leadership essential in knowing what people, you know, what makes people tick.
I really like the recent work of Nir Eyal, and he talks about, he almost disproves the Freudian theory that, you know, humans are motivated by two things. So Freud's theory was to increase pleasure and reduce pain. Nir Eyal has done a lot of work that actually humans are only motivated by one thing, and that is to relieve discomfort.
Yeah.
So actually, when you start to understand what is it that makes your team uncomfortable, that's where you'll find the sweet spot. Because when we feel uncomfortable, we distract ourselves. And when people distract themselves, they gossip, they're on Facebook, they're going to coffees 5 times a day, they're doing all the things that lead for them not to be motivated. So be thinking about listening more actively in your one-to-ones to understand, and even actually asking them, what is it that where you feel most discomfort, you know, in your role? Is it being left to your own devices? Is it working with lots of people? Everybody's different, and everybody will have a different way of being more motivated on something. What's important to one person won't be important to another. Use things that are appropriate for one or the other. And I always kind of get nervous when people are like, oh, but that's not fair to treat somebody different in a team to somebody else. Well, actually, if you want to get the best out of your people, you need to be fair but different.
I think for those people who are going to hang around for the coaching approach, Rachel, we're looking at that discomfort thing in a little bit more depth.
We are, so stay tuned.
So stay tuned if you want to listen to that a little bit later on in the pod.
So after you've understood what makes people tick, what's leadership essential number three, John?
So our leadership essential number three is team environment, thinking about the environment in which your team works. So it's really important that you communicate self-development, I think, to your team. You've got to try and foster more collaboration by asking for input and fully listening to your team members' contributions. I don't think we talk about the actual environment enough. We simply don't talk about the very fundamental behaviours, like say in a team meeting. We talk about the outputs, we talk about the numbers, but we don't actually talk about the inputs, the things that how people are actually behaving on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, if you're not motivated to do your job, it's kind of going to be difficult to reflect in your sales figures.
I think that's really interesting that you've brought that up. And we do talk about this in earlier podcasts where we talk about the importance of role modelling. And we talked about it in relation to change, didn't we? But I think from a motivation point of view, in meetings and things like that, often role modelling is the only thing that you go on. But actually having that open discussion around, right, what are we all bringing to this meeting? How would you like it to be structured? Would you prefer to read things first? Would you prefer to all come in with your questions? Rather than it just being like, what do we want to achieve from this meeting?
I think that's really important. And as we keep doing these podcasts and we pick out these leadership essentials for you, and these coaching approaches, it's really interesting how they all sort of fit together. There's not just one list that works. All these things work together.
Yeah.
So stick around for the coaching approach. But those are your three leadership essentials. Set clear goals. Get to know what makes your team tick. And think about your team environment.
If you're keen to learn more about this subject, stay with us for the scaffold coaching approach.
So, on to the coaching approach. Motivation comes up so many times in coaching conversations with clients. So if this is something that, you know, you find yourself thinking about, it might be that you've lost your own motivation, or perhaps your mojo's gone, or it might be that there's just certain people in your team at certain points that you just can't seem to tackle or cover why they're not motivated. When we're in a coaching conversation and somebody comes to us with this issue, rather than jump into what's going on, it's really useful to step back and think about what is motivation and how the mindset of the leader is often quite fixed into predetermining their view of motivation and how their people in their team aren't meeting their preconceived ideas of what motivation is. So what we thought would be really useful for today's coaching approach is to first look at some of the psychology and the theory around motivation. And John's going to talk you through somebody who he particularly likes, his theory on motivation around fears. And then we're going to step back and ask some questions that we would ask of a leader to reflect on and consider in almost like a real life coaching conversation scenario. And then, as we've done in a few previous podcasts, we're going to introduce a few scenarios with our characters Janet and John, and we can see how motivation is at play for Janet and John in a work-life environment. So John,
so
coaching approach on motivation, where are you going to
sure.
start?
Coaching approach number one, where are you, where are they, and what's the fear? So we thought it would be worthwhile looking at how motivation and how motivating people in your team appears when you introduce some fundamental behaviour. So often people will feel uncertain of the future. You know, they haven't got all the information, and therefore they experience a misunderstanding to some level, and that is often around fear. So consider taking a step back and thinking where your people are starting from on an individual basis. This is coaching approach number one. And consider their motivation from the basis of fear. What is it that your people are fearing? And it'll be different for every individual, but we all do it. And we talked about motivational speakers earlier on in the pod and where they get their skills and their authority from to talk on the subject. One chap that I really respect is a guy called Ant Middleton. You've probably heard of him. He's got a couple of books out. His latest book is The Fear Bubble. And he talks about three basic fears. They're the fear of conflict, fear of failure, and the fear of suffering. So quickly run through these for you, and then we'll bring it to life a little bit more by talking about where Janet and John's fears are and where they're different and the challenges that they meet.
What I really like about Ant Middleton's work is it really resonates with the work of Nir Eyal around him saying that we want to alleviate discomfort.
Yeah.
And discomfort comes from one of these three fears.
So indeed.
If you put the two together, you get a really rich view
yeah.
of what might be going on for yourself and for people in your team.
And those two people have got very different experiences, but
massively.
It's interesting how they approach it. And that's what we were saying earlier on in the pod, is that a lot of these things are sort of cross-pollinated all the time. So let's have a look at the first fear that Ant talks about in his book. So it's the fear of conflict. Once you stop trying to please everyone all the time, you can truly set yourself free of the fear of conflict. Or you have an alternative. You can be the shrinking violet and the victim. But don't make being most popular your main motivation. It really is a sign that you've been motivated by your ego rather than your pride, a healthy pride. So in life, we all encounter enemies, and as Ant says, so what? Don't let them define you. Use them to motivate you. take that energy and use it for good. You're good.
I like that.
So I really like that. Mm-hmm. And we are conflicted so many times, and we do generally like to be liked, but sometimes you inevitably going to run into conflict.
Mm. Do you know what this sparks for me as well, though, is often when you have a situation of conflict, you make somebody your enemy, even though they're not necessarily. And I think, like what you said, when you're in periods of uncertainty, you fill in the blanks. Even though you don't know what's going on, you actually have no idea what's going on. You fill in the blanks, namely with an enemy. So your boss becomes the enemy. Your boss's boss becomes the enemy. The organisation becomes the enemy. Boris Johnson becomes the enemy.
Well, we all like somebody to blame, don't we?
We all like somebody to blame.
Because it's not us.
Yeah. So I don't let them define you. I like that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's fear of conflict. The second fear he talks about is fear of failure. Now, the fear of failure, it just often stifles people from even starting anything. You know, they put their identity in the hands of other people, allowing what we think other people are thinking about and thinking about us to define our success or our failure. So what people often forget, Rachel, is that each failure is a step closer to success. This is a space where we learn. It's a space where we grow and flourish. So the message here is keep going. You know, we adapt as we learn. So if you think your people in your team might be fearing failure, you know what to do. This might be the thing that's demotivating them.
Mm. Do you know, this is on a slight tangent, but I think culturally very relevant. I think we see these two fears, conflict and failure, play out in social media so much today, where, you know, I see friends' kids who are like 17, 18, like ruminating for 20 minutes over whether to post an image on social media because they're scared to death that they're going to be deemed as not pretty enough or a failure.
Yeah.
Or fearful of the conflict that might come about it. And I just think translating that into the world of work, how many companies or brands are petrified of putting anything out if it's deemed to perhaps upset somebody or to be seen as a failure. Therefore, people in teams just procrastinate, and it leads to so much procrastination and worry. And I guess the question you've got to ask is, are you ingraining in that in your team as the leader because you are punishing failure?
Yeah, that happens.
And that punishment could just be, we're not here again. This has taken you, a day to work on? Where are we with this project? You know, all these little nuances that you say, your eye roll, the red pen in work, it's all deemed as failure, isn't it?
It is. And it starts very early when we're in school. Mm. And it sticks with people. So that is fear of failure. So just before we move on to the last fear, we will be doing a podcast for all you procrastinators out there. And there are lots of us. We do it all the time. And we've got some really, really interesting stuff for you. So look out for that coming up in the future. So Ant Middleton talks about fear of suffering. And it really is fascinating to me that your mind plays tricks on you. It moves you forward. It puts you into a future space. And your imagination can run riot with you. Now, there's something called exposure theory that has been proven to reduce people's imagined anxiety of an event. So the more that they're exposed to it, the easier they find it and they can sort of wean themselves off it, if you like.
People use this for a lot of phobias, don't they?
Yes. So anyone who's presented or done any type of public speaking has had that fear of fluffing the lines. You know, you can imagine the stand-up comedian. You know, not one of those people hasn't had to deal with the hecklers, but it was like in the last fear, it's about keeping going. And believe, you know, anybody who's done that stand-up stuff, they will have suffered. And they've predicted that they're going to suffer. But each time, despite those feelings of wanting to get away from the pain.
So just a little tip on this, if you are struggling to stay in the present or you suspect that you or somebody in your team might have a fear of suffering, a useful tip is to say something out loud. So this might be if you're a leader and you're finding that this is affecting you, to just ask a colleague who's impartial to your team or not involved in the situation for 10 minutes to just talk through your thought process out loud. If this is something that you suspect might be going on with your team, having more regular checkups or check-ins where you voice what's going on for you and you ask them to voice what's going on for them in a team environment. Don't underestimate the power of just saying something out loud. You can be really worried about something that may or may not happen in the future. And as soon as you have said it out loud, you're like, why am I even worried about that? This happens to me all the time. I'll be worried about something. My husband will say to me, what's wrong? And when I even start to say it out loud, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm worried about nothing. But don't underestimate it. Another thing that can be quite useful is obviously talking to a coach or somebody confidential to just organise your thoughts, and also journaling every morning. So if you're somebody that works in quite a high pressure environment and you're always in the future of thinking about other people, journaling about your own experience daily can really make you grounded and stay present.
Yeah, and that, you know, it is really a great book, Three Fears in the Fear Bubble by Ant Middleton. And for those of you who follow us on Twitter, we will send you the links so you know exactly what we're recommending. So those are your three fears: conflict, failure and suffering. So before we move on to coaching approach number two, there's quite a lot to take in there over those three fears. So how might this play out in a real life situation? Let's see what Janet and John experience when we're talking about these three fears.
So you may remember our characters, Janet and John, from our very first podcast. Now, the reason why we're using these two characters is because whenever you engage in executive or leadership coaching, everything that is shared and discussed in that room is totally confidential. So we never want to be talking about an experience that we've had with clients. But we can also really learn from situations that other people have been in. So by what we're hoping to do by creating these fictional characters and adding things to their stories is to provide a way to help you without kind of breaking any confidentiality. So in our first podcast, we met the character of Janet. So Janet was characterised by being very status-driven. When we looked at the scarf model, status and hierarchy were important to her, and that tended to be seen as her being a very people-pleasing leader to her senior leaders. So saying yes all the time, very rarely contradicting or going against what the CEO had said. Now, when we look at this through the model of Ant Middleton and we apply these three fears, we can start to get a richer view of what's going on for Janet. And in a coaching conversation, we would explore these with her. And through her early life experience, it would become quite clear to her through self-reflection that the source of her discomfort was a fear of conflict. And through an open discussion, we would start to understand that her parents divorcing when she was very young, 8 years of age, was where this fear of conflict first came from. And her role as a very young child quickly became as a harmoniser and a peacemaker between mummy and daddy. And that is where her need to be liked and to people please, and that she's only motivated and happy when everybody else is happy around her, particularly senior figures.
Back to the subject of motivation then. Janet could potentially be role modelling this fear of conflict to the rest of her team. And so they will see that she doesn't want conflict and she's quashing it straight away. And there are obvious dangers, aren't there, Rachel, with behaving in that way.
Yeah, it's likely that she's not even realising that she's so conflict avoidant. She just assumes that people will get ahead if you please other people. But what she's therefore doing is anybody that's giving her, I'll say conflict, but kind of pushing back or saying, oh, can we look at some challenging, can we look at something a different way in her team? she's probably quashing them straight away, and as a result, they're becoming demotivated. She's in a danger here for her team in falling into the trap of what a lot of leaders do, is hiring people that are like her. So she's going to get a team of taskmasters, very busy all the time, just do as the big boss tells them. Massive danger of groupthink and not being open to issues coming about. And the other danger she's got is of significantly demotivating people that are going to find new innovative ways of working and potentially better solutions that work better for clients. And therefore, they're going to maybe potentially lose big sections of the business when they encounter larger problems. And next to John. So if you can remember from the first podcast, John was characterised by somebody, he'd been at the organisation for 10 years, very well respected with his clients, a middle manager, but very much deemed as a subject matter expert. So what might be going on for John in terms of motivation, John?
Well, I think the fear for John is fear of failure. And I think if we think about him in two spheres here, he has his client work, which he's very proud of. He's highly regarded by his clients, and therefore he doesn't want to drop the quality in terms of what he delivers for them. And then there's also the people that he leads, his team. He's very much a spokesman for them. He's quite a protector of his team. And therefore, if he is potentially thinking about failure, and therefore, if failure looms on the horizon, he will be very guarded to wear against that.
And I think bringing that back to motivation for John in a coaching conversation and through a period of self-reflection, we would probably explore the drama triangle with John, where asking the question, is he seeing or having a tendency to see senior leadership as the villain and his clients as the hero? Not necessarily even thinking that John sees himself as the hero, but because he's got this fear of failure, he's almost not wanting to be seen like the safe pair of hands through his client's view of himself. Therefore, they're the hero, they can do no wrong, but the senior management, the CEO, tends to be that villain, especially when they're putting change initiatives on to him, which is why he's often deemed as being a bit difficult, because he wants to protect the way things are. So luckily for Janet and John, their CEO is quite forward thinking and has invested quite a little bit in people development in the organisation. And after a period of both having executive coaching, Janet and John start to explore where their fears come from. Now, previously, what would we say, John? We'd probably say that Janet and John avoided each other like the plague when it came to managing. They got on okay socially.
Perhaps they just saw one another as enemies.
Yeah, definitely. Or rather, Janet probably saw John as a bit of a pest and John saw Janet as the enemy.
Sure.
But through a period of self-reflection, they start to look at each other in different ways when they start to understand what might be going on for either of the other. And they start to understand that they both share a common interest around a fear of suffering. It comes from different places, but they're both having their mind play tricks on them in the way that they're perceiving the future. John's default to go to senior leadership is the enemy, client is the hero. Janet tending to think that the worst will happen, related back to childhood trauma and experiences, that if she's not on top of everything and people pleasing everybody, that the future will be a disaster. So they actually start to realise that if they buddy up and just say, oh, can I just grab you for a minute? So Janet starts to say to John, could I just run one thing by you? And she's actually finding that John's quite a rational sounding board for her worrying about the future and saying no to the CEO, who, coincidentally, the CEO gets this because she's the one that's invested in the people leadership and development and coaching. And John starts to realise that Janet can be quite a useful resource for not seeing everybody as the enemy, and that actually just agreeing with what senior leadership is saying sometimes when it rationally stacks up is a really innovative way to go.
Now, Janet and John have had leadership coaching to help them reflect on their preferences and their styles. So what you could do here in coaching approach number two is consider what your leadership style is and what motivates you. So understanding other people before understanding your own leadership style can be a mistake. You know, we've talked a lot about knowing where your people are, and that isn't where you are. And so it is with your motivations, which are reflected in your leadership style. So you'll have heard people say, she's only bothered about her property portfolio, he's only bothered about his holiday abroad, golfing with his mates. This is potentially what you might have been role modelling. It's what your people are seeing. It might be the case, and it might be also missing the point by a long way, but think about gaining an understanding of how other people see you.
And just on that, also be thinking about how your people might be seeing you in relation to those fears, because don't forget those fears that Aunt Middleton mentions are also your trigger points for when you revert to type. And that might be where you're stressed out, you're people pleasing, you're going into task rather than goal setting. All these things, stressors, will be when your leadership is most noted and where your reputation starts to stick.
Yes, it's when the stakes are high that we tend to revert to type.
So if you are struggling with perhaps reflecting on what is your leadership style and what it is that motivates you, something that be quite useful to do is a Hogan assessment. Now, we love Hogan assessments because they are validated by a massive pool of over 1 million people, and the data is normalised, so you get a really accurate view of what your reputation is. And this is not about how you see yourself, this is about how other people in your team will see your leadership style. So a Hogan assessment will give your personality on a bright side. So that's kind of how you show up as your best self, and what your strengths are as a leader and why people are drawn to you and what how you can be most motivating to your team. But the HDS on the Hogan also looks at the dark side of personality. And what we're looking at here is your overplayed strengths. So what John mentioned just then is when the stakes are high, people tend to revert to type. And that comes across as using your overplayed strengths. So in Janet's case, that would be around saying yes all the time, even to unrealistic deadlines. To John's type, that's when we go to conflict. So he starts to become difficult in a change process. He starts to give you a million reasons why something won't work as a rebellious type. So he's probably got a high mischievous stake on the Hogan assessment. Now, make no mistake about it, your team will have built a profile up of you, whether or not they verbalise it to each other or hold it in their mind's eye. And this is called your leadership shadow. It's the shadow you cast to your people, and how that oscillates and changes depending on when things are going good or when things are going bad. It will impact the motivation, how motivated your team are and what they role model in your behaviour. Interestingly, what I also like about the Hogan is it gives you a view of what your values are. Now, most people are like, oh, I know what my values are. But this gives you a view of what the work environment is that you create and what work environment you need to get the most out of you. And therefore, what unconscious bias you might have in seeing how your team are motivated, because we tend to see our teams through our own eyes rather than what actually really motivates them. So it can be a really useful tool to do. If you would like more information on a Hogan assessment, visit our website under Psychometric Profiles. It's pretty reasonably priced and it comes with a one-to-one coaching session. So you can just have it as a standalone profile if this is something you're interested in.
And there's also a reminder of those, a quick reminder of those leadership essential tips.
As always, if you have got any feedback or views on today's podcast, please email us at leaders@scaffoldcoaching.com. And don't forget to drop us a review on wherever you get your podcasts from. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.
Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you found today's leadership essentials and coaching discussion points useful. If you'd like to read more about the approach we take, check out our website at scaffoldcoaching.com.